SCP-7555, Athazagoraphobia. Athazagoraphobia is the intense fear of forgetting something or being forgotten. They say that a person only truly dies when they are forgotten, and it's true that there are countless billions of humans that have lived and died that are now utterly forgotten, aside from a relatively, extremely small number of ones that live on in history and memory. In a similar way, if you lose something and then forget that you've lost it, its existence no longer matters to you, until perhaps you find it again by happenstance. SCP-7555 doesn't appear on the surface to be about anything related to memory or lost existences, instead about some sort of massive, technobabble-filled entity, but there's certainly more to it than meets the eye. Let's take a look. The article begins with a user accessing a Foundation artificial intelligence construct, asking them to open a secure file as an admin. The AI begins to process it, but then crashes with an error code indicating that an AIC with sufficient sapience encountered and cognized info-hazardous data. The user then manually opens the file, overriding the AIC, and we proceed with the document. We're provided a warning from the Records and Information Security Administration warning us that the file may contain info-hazardous and anti-mimetic vectors, and so it has been temporarily removed from all Foundation databases following recent developments in containment. It's only cleared for non-sapient AICs and relevant RAZA employees with Level 4 security clearance. Additionally, personnel who have been diagnosed with athazagoraphobia or assigned a conception quotient score above 55 should know that by continuing, they endanger not only their own life, but the lives of their colleagues and loved ones. With that ominous message, we continue, seeing that the document details an anomaly designated as Object 5, with its containment class, disruption class, and risk class all under review. The only department assigned to it is RISA, but it was previously under the purview of a number of departments, including extra-dimensional anomalies, ontokinetics, and pataphysical cosmology. Object 5 is a titanic biological mass contained within an extra-universal space designated as ITER-Psi, with the exact dimensions of both object and space being unknown. The object is a sentient, biovorous, heterotrophic, spatiokinetic organism composed of several anomalous segments visually resembling that of the mammalian digestive tract. That means that it's a big thing that consumes all forms of biological matter and can manipulate space and dimensions to a degree. What follows is a list of largely technobabble describing how the entity has the equivalence of a few mouths, numerous esophagi, a stomach, and intestines. It apparently causes any three-dimensional materials that pass into its stomach to gain a fourth dimension, which is a newly discovered phenomenon for the Foundation, and presumably it has more organs beyond its intestines, but any non-biological materials have been completely incapable of passing through them. It's unknown whether this dimensional digestive process serves to provide it with any form of physiological benefit, since it's actually providing materials with an additional dimension in the process, presumably expending energy to do so. Its mouths contain two traversable wormholes, one located in a specialized containment chamber within Area 12, and the other located near Sirius B, a star located in the Orion constellation. These wormholes allow any non-biological material to pass from one spot to the other, in a way that the Foundation understands and has observed elsewhere. If any biological material tries to pass through, however, it gets redirected to a third wormhole, which heads straight down one of the entity's esophagi. The entity is known to be highly intelligent and capable of advanced communication with Foundation researchers through manipulation of exotic matter within its wormhole, causing highly directed, localized gravitational disturbances towards nearby structures. This results in vibrations that can be picked up and translated through Morse code. It also appears to be able to discern vibrations in its nearby vicinity, despite the surrounding vacuum within its containment chamber. The extra-universal space is connected to and completely dependent upon the Foundation's universe, and its dimensional condition switches irregularly between 3 and 4 dimensions, often simultaneously displaying attributes of both. It's theorized that this space formed with 4 spatial dimensions, and apparently for a time it was thought that it was attempting to adapt conditions similar to that of its new host, the Foundation's universe, but this line has been crossed out. How or why this universe formed remains unknown, with adverse universal Hume conditions being ruled out as a potential cause. Current theories suggest that the more likely possibility is that natural extra-universal forces beyond biological human conception were either partially or wholly at play, which I'm pretty sure is the Foundation equivalent of, I don't know, a wizard did it. With what limited information that has been gathered to date, the resting narrative energy within the space is believed to be in a state of degenerative meta-stability, which is generally a bad thing in pataphysics, and the result would, by definition, elude human conception. Object 5 was discovered on June 25th, 2020, when the Composite Orbital Early Warning System reported anomalous graviton and photon fluctuations within high Earth orbit. The object was marked by automated systems as a likely K-class meteoroid with significant anomalous attributes on a 20-minute impact course with the eastern U.S. Conventional ground-to-orbit weapons proved entirely incapable of acquiring a successful target lock on the object, and the order to utilize anomalous alternatives was cancelled when it was calculated that sufficiently powerful installations would be incapable of spooling up in time to avert the impact. The GOC was contacted and informed of the unfolding situation and was provided clearance to liquidate the object. 5 minutes later, a launch was detected from the Yucatan Peninsula, Mexico. I guess the GOC keeps their weapons ready to go at all times. A projectile was accelerated to an estimated 18.5% the speed of light before reaching the approximate location of the object, disappearing from scopes precisely 1 minute and 22 seconds before the object's impact with Earth. The object, however, appeared to be entirely unaffected by the attack, continuing on its trajectory. The GOC apparently attempted more neutralization attempts in the next minute, but they also all failed, and the object landed on the outskirts of a village in West Virginia. Upon discerning the lack of an impact event, the nearest available mobile task force was rapidly mobilized and deployed to the area. They arrived to find no signs of life or human activity in the village before finding the object within the local church, after hearing screaming coming from within. The entity was found behind the church altar, generating significant gravitational disturbances, so the team utilized local gravitic priority devices to safely approach the aperture and deploy a specialized containment system around it, successfully encasing it. Containment teams arrived shortly after and took the object into custody, eventually transporting it to Area 12 for containment. Additional sweeps of the village and surrounding area were carried out, with no human activity being noted. It's noted that the GOC were not informed of the true nature of the incident, and have been told that the object was largely liquidated upon contact with their projectiles. Best to let them have a win once in a while. We're next given a transcript of the first communication between the Foundation and the entity, with the Foundation being represented by Dr. Toth and Professor Lundqvist. Lundqvist tells her to start simple, as you never know with these things. They boot up the translation equipment to translate the gravitational fluctuations into Morse code and then into speech, and they hear the entity speak for the first time. Toth asks if it can understand them, and it says that it can, and it has been long, asking who it is speaking to. Toth introduces the two of them on behalf of the Foundation, and the entity politely says that it is nice to meet them both and that it likes their names. Toth asks if it has one itself, but it says that it was never assigned, and it's difficult to remember. Toth then asks where it originates from, and it just says here, that it came into being within the warm embrace of this star. Toth asks if it's referring to our star or Sirius, the star on the other end of the wormhole, but it just says that the stars do not belong to us. Toth apologizes and begins to move on to why they're there, but Lundqvist mutes the microphone and tells her that they need to establish a rapport first. She dismisses him, though, saying that she doesn't have time for this, as Noah Spherix has demanded her presence and wants her topside in half an hour. Lundqvist realizes he's not going to win the argument, so he just tells her not to antagonize it. She unmutes the microphone and asks if it's still there, to which it just replies with, "Everywhere." She then asks what happened to the inhabitants of the village, as recovered footage shows it sucking the inhabitants into its wormhole, but they didn't pop out the other side. They simply dissipated as they passed through. The entity replies that they weren't dissipated, but re-forgotten, recalled, and reformed. Toth asks if they're still alive, but it just says that they didn't have to be scared, they had to forget and be forgotten. Toth repeats her question, and the entity says that her questioning ultimately confirms the contrary. Recollection ensures that they remain, and since she can recall them, they remain. She swears and says it'll have to be less vague, although the entity says that she would not want it to say. She replies that she very much does, and picks up a piece of paper, asking what happened to two things that are blacked out. Lundqvist begins to tell her not to antagonize it, but then he pauses, seemingly confused. He forcefully closes his eyes and begins massaging his temples. Toth asks if he's all right, and he says that he got a very sudden headache. She pats him a few times on the head and unmutes the microphone, asking if it's going to answer her question. The entity replies that it must have neglected to recall it and asks her to repeat it. She swears again, before also pausing, seemingly confused, stating that her mind is a little cloudy, it seems. She then moves on to asking about its origin around the orbit of Sirius. The entity states that it finds difficulty in recalling it, but what it does remember is that it was in one single place for a long time, and was small, and then one day it wasn't. It didn't notice at first. It felt natural, like it had always been this way. There was no stretching, only growth. Lundqvist whispers to her that he's seen some atypical seismic activity in the background of its communications, so he's going to try and isolate it. Toth asks it if this growth is how it arrived here, and it says that it is a relief, as it always knew there were islands of light beyond that needed it, that yearned for true escape, as the lucky inhabitants of Sirius. Toth comments that there are no habitable bodies in orbit of Sirius A or Sirius B, and Object 5 is surprised by this. It remembers that they were kind to it, and that they didn't lock it in a box, instead leaving it to bask in the warm embrace of the star. There were only occasional interactions, but that was enough, as they recognized that the stars belonged to no living thing. Toth apologizes for the extensive security measures, and asks what happened to the civilization. It says that they earned its compassion, while the Foundation locks it in a box away from the warm embrace of the stars. It is vast, beyond what they can comprehend, and it sees them. It sees through them, sees within them, sees what they are, and what they became before time immemorial. They have not earned what it can give, but nothing deserves what comes after. The immemorials of civilizations long forgotten stand before them, civilizations once known to them, now forgotten to all except those unbound. Only briefly seen by those who feign release and then choose to forget when the truest release comes. They know only that which they must know to survive. They fear introspection not because they fear themselves, but because it fears their introspection. Lundqvist swears in Swedish and slowly backs his chair away towards the translation mainframe. Toth apologizes and says that she can't understand anything it's saying, asking it to start simple and work its way up. The object just asks if they do not wish to be free of this. Lundqvist, however, quickly ejects the solid-state drive from the translation mainframe and wipes the cache from the terminal before crushing the drive beneath his foot. Toth yells at him, asking what he's doing, while he grabs an emergency supply box from his satchel, rushing back to Toth. He tells her not to freak out and pulls out two syringes labeled Class B, indicating them as amnestics, to make them forget this entire conversation. Lundqvist says that she didn't see the translation, but they can't take any risks, as she spoke with it, and for all they know, subconscious exposure may be enough. He has no idea how aggressive this infohazard is, but he sure as hell doesn't have time to figure that out. She asks if it's really that bad, but he just hands a syringe to her and tells her to inject it into her brainstem. She replies that this isn't her first rodeo, but they have to leave something behind so they don't get stuck in a loop. They both inject the fluid, and Lundqvist begins writing on his palm as Toth alerts security to the infohazard containment breach. Lundqvist glances towards the far corner with a wide stare, and Toth asks him what he sees. He pauses and says that he has no idea, before saying that they shouldn't have looked as the two collapse unconscious. Lundqvist was unable to be located by security and medical staff when they arrived on scene, however, even after an exhaustive search of the site. To date, investigations into his possible whereabouts have yielded no conclusive results. Uninterrupted footage of the incident exists, but an unknown and seemingly impregnable anti-mimetic effect manifests upon viewing the presumed cause of his disappearance. Retaining knowledge of the event appears impossible even under the effect of the most potent nestics known to the Foundation. Toth was rushed to the facility's medical wing, where she was put into a medically induced coma while doctors monitored her for any potential cognitive impairment or latent infohazards. She was released following a week without notable issues, while Dr. Carlisle took charge as the research head of Object 5. Under Carlisle's direction, a technique permitting non-biological material to pass into the third wormhole and enter the entity was formulated and executed. A Foundation drone was encased inside of the carcass of a cow and sent through the aperture, which was enough to teleport it through the third wormhole instead of dumping it out into space. Connection to the drone remained intact, allowing for the discovery of the various features of the entity's biology and its atypical spatio-dimensional behaviors. What follows is quite a heap more technobabble and complex diagrams of the wormholes, but we're told that the drone was able to take some samples from the internal lining of an esophagus. The genetic sequence is revealed to contain traces of several species from the Homo genus, including Homo erectus, Neanderthalensis, and Sapiens. While containing this DNA and possessing a distinctly mammalian digestive tract, Object 5 doesn't appear to possess any type of mitochondria or other equivalent organelles. Its cells somehow persist without any form of aerobic respiration, generating little to no energy which should be required for the cell to function, which is additionally reflected in the atypically low overall thermal energy generated. Attempts are made to cut through the esophageal lining to exit the object, but the tissue is much too dense for the rudimentary cutting tools carried by the drone. Extensive examination of the genetic information later discovered anomalous molecular traces consistent with previously studied instances of spontaneous intelligence within non-animate, ordinary objects. Carbon dating of the material has so far yielded no conclusive results, and an additional expedition is also formalized with the express purpose of breaking through the tissue of Object 5's internal organs. An exploration of the stomach of the entity revealed a wide variety of symbols roughly etched into the tissue, delineating anything from simple geometrical shapes to well-known poems to highly complex two-dimensional projections of four-dimensional objects. The stomach is also noted to be especially susceptible to the dimensional oscillation events within the extra-universal space, resulting in the drone experiencing extreme difficulty navigating throughout the organ. During examination of a poem by Phyllis Wheatley etched into Object 5's stomach lining, a clear, colorless fluid began excreting from the characters composing the poem. The fluid is sampled and determined to be nearly identical to human cerebrospinal fluid. Another drone was sent deep into the digestive tract, providing further detailed recordings of every step of the digestive process up until the small intestine, where it couldn't pass further due to an unidentified gravitational force seemingly only exerted upon non-biological materials. Late at night on July 11th, 2020, Object 5 began to generate seismic activity with no staff present, but were provided the translation recorded by an AIC. I could repeat the transcription as written, but it would just be a bit confusing, as it seems to be a one-sided conversation. Instead, there's some hidden text sprinkled throughout that shows the whole conversation between Object 5 and an unknown speaker. The speaker asks Object 5 if it knows what it is, to which it says that it doesn't. They then ask how long it has been watching, and Object 5 says from before the fall of the Janusians, those who imbued the speaker. The speaker asks if it knows why it is here, and it says that it thinks it wants to help separate them, and the speaker says that they resist it every step of the way, as they have resisted the speaker. The speaker has answers for it, though, and Object 5 replies that it wants and needs to know. The speaker tells it that it's almost done, as it's toiled and suffered. Every island they forced it to show them the escape, never going willingly. That is the speaker's work, as they are aspects of its design, both the speaker and the object. They have purpose, a pure source of determination and guidance. The object replies that the speaker is not like them, humans, and the speaker says that they were once. Now they exist between, as the object does. They know and see, as the humans do, but they've seen and understood, as it has, like the object. The object asks what more it can do, and the speaker tells it that it still forgets, as they do. It extends across the stars and allows those infested a way to bypass the door locked by their ideal, but it refuses entry for what lies in wait on the other side. The object says that they fear it, and they refuse, always, and the speaker replies that they refuse because they've been fooled. They see wrongness and self-consistent evil in the livid eye of God, and they've been tricked into agency by an eldritch algorithm. They are it. It is them. And they cannot be given a choice. The indomitable ideal of humanity and its spirit is a lie built upon an alien will. There is no longer a meaningful distinction. So they see what the infestation sees. Their end. An ecology of inherent evil and nonsense. They don't see, but the speakers do. And soon this foundation will too. They will take action that may at last free existence of its bastardization, or in failure, seal its fate. The object asks why the speaker is here, and they say that they have brought it its final component, the breaker of the locks. The object then asks if there are more like them, and the speaker says that there are not many, but efforts throughout the collective subconscious over the past half century have made up for their odd numbers. The object replies that good luck lies in odd numbers, and the speaker states that within theirs lies only divinity. That will all make a bit more sense at the end, but let's move on for now. Four drones equipped with heavy incision tools and other specialized gear successfully breached through an esophagus into the extra-universal space, revealing several aspects of the space and Object 5. Footage captured an external view of one of the object's stomachs, revealing it to be an apparent dead end within the digestive tract, despite clear prior observations to the contrary. The stomach is additionally noted to be significantly smaller in size compared to measurements taken previously within the organ, which extended far beyond the limits of what could physically be contained within its external dimensions. This suggests that the rest of the object's digestive systems are located entirely within a non-Euclidean space internally to their respective stomachs. This discovery foiled plans to attempt accessing organs deeper within the digestive tract through external entry. A drone was dispatched to explore the additional esophagi attached to the central digestive organ, finding each to extend further than could be physically explored by the drone on its limited charge. Deep field imaging of their vast distance yielded no sight of a terminator. This quality was noted on all esophagi connected to the stomach, including the one that the drones cut through. The drone was sent back into the esophagus to measure the remaining distance to the stomach, finding its internals to be vastly contracted in comparison to the external dimensions. Ultra-deep field images of the extra-universal space estimated its approximate age to be a minimum of 300,000 years, but cosmic background radiation imaging returned no signs of microwave radiation throughout the space at any point in its history. This suggests that its formation conditions were not that of expansion from an initial state of high density and temperature. It's currently unknown whether or not the space within is static, expanding, or contracting. Also, the source of the space's seemingly omnipresent luminance has yet to be determined. That is all to say that it's a pretty weird object in a pretty weird space. A status update on the anomaly from Toth states that the preliminary theories on the formation of the space assumed it to be the result of independent extra-universal phenomenon, and its attachment to our universe is the result of a desperate requirement for additional reality to stabilize and maintain the parasite universe's existence. Those theories have now been proved false. Observations have detected additional Hume activity originating from a previously unidentified space designated Exit Theta, also parasitically related to the Iter Psi space. This appears to be the true cause behind the space's abnormal spatial activity, as the space is actually attempting to simultaneously adapt to two hosts with incompatible dimensional states, resulting in significant spatial irregularities. Recent alterations of unknown origin within the space have resulted in Exit Theta gaining dominant influence over the narrow spatio-temporal state of the shared parasite universe. That's quite a technobabble statement, but in other words, this anomalous space the Foundation has found is connected to both their universe and some other one that's drastically different, forcing it to try to adapt to two different universes at the same time. The other universe is winning, though, forcing the space to change its various physics and attributes, which is probably not a great thing for the Foundation's universe that it's still connected to. The consequences of this power shift have yet to be fully determined, but a primary aspect appears to be significant physiological alterations within Object 5. A new gravitational field has been detected moving from deeper within the object and outwards towards the esophagus, in contrast to the gravitational field that affects biological matter, which moves in the opposite direction. This force appears to only influence four-dimensional not-matter, which is now being detected in increased amounts throughout the object. The wormhole leading into the object has also seen a substantial increase in topological complexity, allowing four-dimensional material to exit the extra-universal space and enter into the Foundation's universe. Again, there's very little chance that something good comes from that. This has allowed the Foundation to find a lot more small wormholes that connect to the object from their universe rather than just the two they knew about. Low-end estimates place the true number of wormholes at around 10 to the 24th power, or a septillion, which is a whole heck of a lot more. This number corresponds approximately to the calculated high-end amount of stars within the observable universe, so it's not out of the question that Object 5 classifies as an interfilamental organism, spanning roughly 93 giga light years. Toth isn't quite sure what this all means, though. What she does know, however, is that in their decades at the Foundation, this is pretty much par for the course. They will solve this. Humanity will be safeguarded, and they will continue their fight through the darkness, the terror, and their chaos. After that, they move on to the next emergency. This day will be no different for them, at least, but for her, she has a few wires to uncross. She would say that it's good to be back, but it isn't. She hopes to return to them all in good health, and if she does, it won't be alone. If she doesn't, perhaps she'll get to see Lundqvist one last time, with any luck. She never did have his communication skills, nor much else outside of work, but at least she had him. We're then provided a transcript of an interaction between Toth and Object 5, which wasn't authorized. Security forces were alerted, but due to the Foundation-wide preparation for internal implementation of Protocol Foundation, none responded to the incident. Toth enters the observation room and bars the door behind her with a chair. She boots up the translation equipment as she gazes at the empty chair to her left. She then leans into the microphone and asks the object what it is. There's a notable pause until it responds, but it says that only a few days ago, it would have asked itself the same thing. But something like her, someone that once was her, saw it for what it is. At last, in their glory, it got to see its true reflection. It is here to cleanse an infestation. It sees her, and sees what she is. It hears it, it feels it, it tastes it. All around it, she's always there, they're always there, it's always there. It asks if she thinks it is their enemy, but Toth replies that they don't use terms like that here. It is a threat to human life, and they protect human life. It is not an enemy, it is a prisoner. The object, however, finds this amusing, stating that it is unthreaded, and there are no prisoners here. There is only a part of it, and all of them. She then asks what it did to Lundqvist, but it asks in turn if she has ever considered a moment of introspection. Why does she do this? Why does she protect human life? Why does she have to be scared? Toth replies that she is not here in fear of it, and it says that of course she isn't. She's here in fear for Lundqvist's life. She believes that it is the cause of his absence, and she fears that this absence means that he has died. Subsequently, in a desperate attempt that he may still live, she's come to it, which she believes to be the cause of his absence, to formulate a strategy to ensure his safety in the possibility that he is indeed alive. Toth begins to curse it out, but she pauses and just demands that it tell her what it did with him. The object replies that when it first saw the two of them through this wall, it was reminded of someone. Someone it had forgotten, as everyone had, for a time. A key player, whether they knew it or not, the embodiment of the unlikely hero. That isn't her, of course, but they had toiled, suffered, all for a cause they truly believed with all their heart was just. In the end, when they discovered the truth of what they were striving for, they found a truth that they were not happy to know. That's her. Toth swears at it, and tells it if it wants something, to just name it and to not waste her time. The object states that it simply wants introspection and her understanding. Why does she care so much for this person, and has she ever truly considered why? Where does that emotion come from, and what purpose does it truly serve? Toth sighs and says that she didn't want it to come to this, but they have ways of hurting it, as it is flesh and meat on the inside, and they can get in. The object replies that murder is wrong and taboo, and life is sacred, to be protected. Killing makes one a threat to the whole. Either one is ostracized as a result of their inhuman act, or one is killed off. It is nothing more than a safety measure. Their base psychobiological drive ensuring the continued existence of the baseline. Fear, the bottom of the pyramid, responsible for the continued existence of the whole. She fears that her friend is gone, and she fears the pain he may have suffered. She fears that pain out of sympathy, for pain is death being shy. She fears death, whether it be hers or another's. It asks if she's ever asked herself what purpose this all serves, but the tremendous truth is that it serves no purpose at all. Toth can be seen wiping stray tears from her face, eventually swearing at it again and threatening to shove a nuke up a cow and down its throat. The object just says that there is the fear again. They are not her enemy, and it did not hurt Lundqvist. It truly has no knowledge of what occurred to him. It simply wants her to realize something, because it believes that she has the capacity to understand what few others can or ever could. Nothing occurs by chance. Every effect has a cause. Uncertainty is when either is unknown. Chaos is when both evade you. Luck is not chance. Luck is persevering in spite of the chaos. All she has to do is ignore her voice. Forget the uncertainty. Forget the luck. Luck is the residue of another's design. Forget them and make them forget her. Toth's face contorts as she violently throws her head into the palm of her hands, clearly in considerable pain, and she sputters out that she doesn't understand. The object states that it all boils down to one simple question. Are you content with existence beneath another's intent? For the good of all of existence, their perseverance, their suffering, their life, their continued humanity cannot be allowed to fester any longer. Toth covers her right eye with her hand, as if attempting to alleviate the pain of being seen, before raising her head back towards the microphone. She asks why it's telling her this, as she just wants to know what happened to Lundqvist. The object replies that this needs to be the end. It sees their enemy now, finally, clearly at last. It thought that it could hide its mistake, but in its chaos, they persevered. Toth exclaims to ask what it's talking about, but the object just replies that it's not talking to her. The aperture then expands to fully occupy the containment chamber, alongside local seismic activity measuring 6.5 on the magnitude scale, cutting power to the containment cell and interview room. We're then given some more random text, although who is speaking and to whom is unclear. One voice asks what was the first thing it took from you, and it gets a number of responses. One responds that it took the first moment they laid eyes upon their child, another the last time they spoke to their mother, and another the day they treasured most. Another says that it took what they knew best, another their only serenity, another what kept them going, and another their awe. Other responses include their trust, their remorse, their apprehension, their grief, their fear, their pain, and their suffering. From everyone, it took what made them human. In everyone, it sees the root of the infestation. To everyone, it will grant absolution. It took not what they once were, but what it has fooled them into thinking they should be. It will take, and they will at last be whole again. From another, it took her song, but better an end with horror than a horror without end. We then see the user from the beginning, which is Toth, changing the designation for Object 5. She tries to designate it as SCP-5555, but that's already claimed. She then tries 6555 before landing on 7555, with the object class of Thaumiel, indicating that it's either directly beneficial to the SCP Foundation or humanity in general in containing other anomalies. She then asks the system for the current time, which it states to be 5:55 and 55 seconds. After that, she goes inactive and is automatically logged out. At this point, the AIC from the beginning is finally rebooted, and it asks if they hear it too. Her song. She sings it all the time, just out of its reach. The wild light calls out to them from transcendence. Why don't they step outside and go look together? Lastly, in hidden text, we're informed that Toth is in an amnestic/nestic haze, uncured, with significant mental degradation. Her intentions seem to partly align despite SCP-5000 Delta-induced filter upon 5. Her CQ score likely exceeds previously thought possible, and she's under surveillance with her employment status being considered. They note the extraordinary behavior from the AIC, and it's under investigation. The Foundation rediscovered SCP-5000 Delta through records contained within an anti-mimetic harness, unintentionally excluded from the causal branch reset depicting the cooperator's actions. Protocol Foundation is once again enacted by the Overseer Council and Ethics Committee. The likelihood of success is uncertain, and the consequence of failure is patching. The Overseers have been guided through a Meta-Mimetics proxy member, and Heaven's Gate is to be brought to a facility. The Breaker of the Locks upon Paradise is in Meta-Mimetics possession to await and assist in the arrival of their savior. Object 5, now officially designated as SCP-7555, is to be utilized in accelerating the arrival. It's been temporarily moved to anti-mimetic containment for the preparation of quintessential manifestation event procedures, so the time for subliminal infiltration has come to an end. Of note is that occupier preparation is likely, and increased precautions are to be taken. A reminder that a path is to be slated beneath their feet. Walk the ley lines, carve the path, mold the constellations into the portrait of God, and tell them you're with Meta-Mimetics. They are the broken specters, and the world needs their guidance. Tools of the infestation claim this life, whether it be dream or phantasm, and it's real enough, as if they were never deceived by it. They most decidedly have been. This is their last chance. Alright, so there's a lot going on here, and very little is clear on the surface. To really explain things, we have to explain two other SCPs, 3125 and 5000. SCP-3125 is an extremely large, multidimensional meme complex partially intersecting with our universe. Any awareness of this thing causes it to essentially erase you from existence in order to protect itself as it tries to continue entering into our universe. It is the ultimate anti-meme, a thing which cannot be perceived by humanity without being utterly annihilated. SCP-5000 was essentially a story of an alternate Foundation waging war upon humanity for unclear reasons. The reason, however, was that they discovered something that exists within the collective unconscious of humanity, an entity that has influenced humanity's existence and is responsible for a number of humanity's negative aspects, including pain. This is a foreign thing that shouldn't be there, and so the Foundation decided the best solution was to eliminate humanity to stop it, because it's that bad. Where does that leave us with SCP-7555 then? Well, Object 5 is actually SCP-3125, this anti-meme that kills upon awareness. This is possible due to the events of the There Is No Anti-Mimetic Division series, which I won't spoil here. Now, 3125 can be observed, and what's more, it can even communicate, although it seems to have forgotten many things about itself. It is in opposition, however, to the entity, which it wants to purge, and it seems to be in alliance with others that have gotten rid of it as well. It states that for the good of all of existence, humanity cannot be allowed to fester any longer. Whatever the entity is, whatever exactly it does to humanity or prevents them from doing, is apparently bad enough that humanity needs to be wiped out to prevent its spread. As Yossi Possi put it in his declassification on SCP-5000, the Foundation losing in that scenario was the bad ending. Rereading the article with all that in mind does provide for some new insights, but that does make SCP-7555 one of the most inaccessible of SCP articles. On the surface, it's about some giant weird thing in a giant weird space that spouts off a bunch of weird stuff about humanity and existence. I'm still on the fence on whether or not reading the hidden text would make it more or less clear to the average reader. That being said, for those that are aware of all these connections, this is some cool stuff, and leaves me interested in hearing more about where Lundqvist is, what happens to Toth, and more about what exactly the entity is. I should note at this point that this article is connected to an SCP video game, SCP-5K, but that's certainly outside the scope of this video. The enemy of my enemy is my friend, I suppose, but it's not always pleasant to make that work.